Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 74 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday... What? Hello?
Bye.
I heard somebody talking.
Wasn't me.
I don't think it was me.
That's creepy. Oh my god.
The podcast is already haunted. You have to leave this in now. You have to.
The podcast is officially... We've jerry-rigged our own spirit box, you guys. We have a haunted podcast.
It's the ghost of Johnny Five, who cannot be with us here today.
Who was hoisted by his own petard and kicked off the podcast. Hi, everybody. My name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight is my co-host, Mr. Bradford. What's cracking, my friend?
Nighttime. So right. Not a whole lot. How about you?
Oh, not too much. Just enjoying the opening salvo of spooky times here in Christmas Creeps HQ. But filling in for J5, who has, in fact, absconded with all of our notes this week, is our good friend Stuart. Stuart, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody. Happy to be here. My first appearance.
Yeah, this is a first-time, long-time situation. Stuart, you've been kind of hanging out with us in our Discord channel for a long time, and we just haven't had a chance to get you on the show until now.
Yep, I love the show, and happy to be here for my favorite time of year.
Thank you. Yeah, happy to have you, because as we all know, it is the best month out of the Christmas Creeps calendar. It's home for the horror days, everybody. Oh my god, I can't believe we finally made it.
It's been a hard road this year, hasn't it? We've really outdone ourselves in picking just pure garbage.
The dregs of the dregs, the worst of the worst. But hopefully we've saved the best for Home for the Horror Days. Because this year, the theme was sequels. This was all Jonathan Five's idea. And then he just ditched us at the 11th hour. But this week on the show, we're discussing the sequel to Maniac Cop, Maniac Cop 2. Which is a film that I don't think I was quite prepared for when we sat down to watch it. First impressions, gentlemen.
Stuart, you wanna esteemed guest, friend of the pod, you wanna take a crack at this first?
Well, yeah, it's definitely was a sequel. Had all the hallmarks of an 80s sequel.
Yeah.
It was more of the same, but a little bit bigger, a little bit worse, a little bit crazier.
There's some good neon. I'll give it that.
Oh, yeah. So, like, great, like, late 80s, early 90s, just, like, New York sleaze is the best I can describe it.
Yeah.
But I completely forgot about the gross candy I was going to eat.
You were so excited to jump right into Maniac Cop, too.
I was, because honestly, I kind of really dug it. Okay. I really had fun with this one. And I enjoyed it so much, I actually got a little concerned that you guys would hate it and we'd have a big fight on the show tonight.
Oh, when have you known us to hate anything? Come on.
Oh, just about every time I recommend something, it always turns out to be terrible. So, you know, whatever.
I enjoyed my time with it. It was fine. It wasn't okay. Anything amazing, but it was fine. It's much better than what we usually watch on this show. Let's put it that way.
Better in terms of, like, craftsmanship and quality. Content-wise, hoo boy, is this a big old can of worms.
There's some stuff going on in this film.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, rest assured, we didn't just pick Maniac Cop 2 for no reason. This is, in fact, a film that takes place at Christmas.
Yes.
For better or for worse, you know, the accoutrements of Christmas are here. Christmas trees, Christmas lights, you know, holiday scenery. It's all here. So we're not just doing this to troll you people. This is a real Christmas movie.
Yeah. We must also say, we're going to get into the plot summary and everything. Probably it's a little bit different than it did back in the late 80s, early 90s, huh? What with the whole gestures at everything?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, this last summer, and literally every summer and every moment before that, in perpetuity before it. But yet,
I mean, we're gonna say this at some point, so let's just rip the Band-Aid off now. ACAB sure as hell wasn't a thing in 1990.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess all I can really say is, like, you know, if you got one to crack open, it's time to crack open those cold ones.
Can check.
I do not have a can this week, unfortunately. Well, I do have a bottle.
Can check. The can check's in your heart.
The real can check was the friends we made along the way.
Yes. What are you working with?
This is one of our local breweries, Foothills Brewing's Pumpkin Ale and Spices.
Ooh. Do you like a good...
It is a delightful Oktoberfest. It's not even their Oktoberfest. It's just the pumpkin ale.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuart?
Accidentally dry in my apartment tonight, so I've just got my little tap water here.
Well,
oh no!
There's no shame in that. It's good. You're going to keep us grounded. I like it.
Keep us on an even keel. Bradford, what about you? You got anything?
I cannot for the life of me remember if this is a repeat from last episode. This is a three-notched Motu Eika Juicy IPA.
That does not ring a bell, but it also sounds like an extremely Bradford kind of thing.
I do like this recent trend of juicy IPAs. I'm all about that juice.
All about that juice life, huh?
Juice rules everything around me. Which is actually that there's a local brewery around here that has a series called Dreams, which stands for Juice Rules Everything Around Me. It's highly sought after. Wow. Never had it. Would like to have it someday. I have it on good word that it is delicious.
Juice rules everything around you, and it's not because you have a toddler in the house.
Well, that's true, too. We haven't actually introduced her to the joys, horrors of juice yet.
The wonders of juice.
Yeah, we haven't broken the seal on that, so to speak, as of yet. It's going to happen, but we're trying to delay it. Yes, baby steps. Trying to delay it as long as possible.
That's entirely fair.
She doesn't need any more sugar. Anyhow.
So, friends, Maniac Cop 2. The place I feel like we have to start is with Maniac Cop 1. First of all, they're very similar, but also the first one leads directly into the second one. And so I guess here with a quick recap, Stuart, would you like to do us the honors? What the heck happened in Maniac Cop 1?
Oh, boy. Maniac Cop 1 kind of opens up with your usual 80s zombie creature. He happens to be a police officer, wrongfully and or not wrongfully convicted of extrajudicial killings. He basically goes around to terrorize the police force.
Pretty much, yeah. And the X factor there is that the cop who's framed for doing all of the maniac cop murders is none other than Bruce Campbell, the favorite actor of horror nerds around the world. And so the movie is mostly Bruce Campbell and his lady friend trying to hunt down and solve the mystery of who is the maniac cop. And it ends in this very dramatic car chase and police van crash into the Hudson River, where the maniac cop is like run through with a pole and then drowned. But of course, there is a sequel for a reason. The maniac cop lives. And the sequel picks up right where the first one leaves off, except there's two very important details in between, because the first one ends on St. Patrick's Day, correct?
That's my understanding.
Yep, they have the parade and everything.
And the sequel picks up at Christmas. If I didn't know any better, I would say it took place the very next day, which is a weird choice.
Yeah, the first 3 minutes of two... we see kind of a recap of the last few minutes of the first movie. And then we just basically cut to Mulder and Scully. Therese? No, I don't know, man.
Jack and Teresa.
Jack and Teresa. Wow, I was actually a lot closer than I thought I was.
You were in the ballpark.
I was in the right ocean. Jack and Teresa. And they've basically been on, you know, put on like paid leave, and they're not sure, you know, that they're fit to walk the streets, so to speak. Can't imagine that they're going to let them... Can't imagine that there's just going to be an 8-month window gap what have you. St. Paddy's Day is in March, right?
Last I checked, yeah.
So that's it. Yeah, 8 month gap where they're just kind of sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah, and only at Christmas time do they decide to give them their evaluation after this gruesome, horrific ordeal.
Yeah, and I guess our titular cop had to nurse his gigantic impalement wound for a few months there.
Yeah, and also develop some even ghastlier facial wounds.
I guess maybe he hung out at the bottom of the Hudson and kind of let those cool, toxic waters kind of salve his wounds and then crawled back out to the auto wrecking lot where he found a working car miraculously.
I would say he was down there hanging out with Super Shredder, but Ninja Turtles 2 came out the year after this, so I can't say that. Oh, boy. But yes, friends, Maniac Cop 2 is bigger than the original, more gruesome by a wide margin than the original, and also quite a bit sleazier and grosser in ways that I don't know that I can properly articulate, but that's what we're here to do tonight. Bradford, what's the main thrust of Maniac Cop 2?
Well, wouldn't you know it, the Maniac Cop is back. Jack and Teresa. Jack has washed his hands of the whole ordeal of the first movie, whereas Teresa is still convinced that the Maniac Cop is at large. They're going on about the whole Cordell got framed thing. That's the body of Cordell. Nobody at the police department wants to recognize that, mainly because it was a cover up by the department, because the commissioner is in cahoots and receiving bribes, what have you, and Cordell got too close to it. Spoiler alert. Jack and Teresa get assigned to a force psychologist who is assessing them. She is also not convinced that this is the body of Cordell. About 15 minutes into the movie, Jack gets killed by Cordell. There you have it, folks.
Conveniently in front of his favorite newsstand clerk, who is blind. See.
You know what? You're right. That is a bit, I know it's lame to point out plot holes, but you're right, because the newspaper is covering Jack being a hero for stopping the serial killer, the maniac cop. You wouldn't wait 8 months to break that in the front page of a newspaper. So
unless it's like an 8 month anniversary piece, which also is patently ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Anyways,
movies is movies. It's okay.
Movies is movies, especially in the 80s. It's Christmas now. Christmas comes right after St. Paddy's Day now. Anyhow,
like you do,
as one is wont to do. Jack is killed by said maniac cop Cordell, and this leads Teresa to believe even more strongly that it's Cordell out for revenge, and that the whole nightmare scenario is playing out again. She convinces. Why do they go to the TV station together? Why do they go on TV together? Remind me. Teresa wants to go on television to blow this whole thing wide open, and the psychiatrist.
Psychiatrist wants to help her, I guess, emotionally, because she knows she's about to be bombarded by cops and lawyers and the press and everything. So she's going to basically be her emotional support. Right.
And it's clear that Brass is vehemently against this. She's going against all of her orders, all of the hierarchy to do this. Can you remind me of the psychologist's name? I'm sorry.
I want to say her name was Susan.
That's right, Susan.
Susan, yes.
Susan!
So on the way to the station, or actually is it after? Is it after they're on television?
No, it's on the way.
That's right.
On the way to the TV station, they hail a cab, which immediately has to stop because the cab has two flat tires. Guess what? The maniac cop is on the trail, and he slashed the tires.
Maniac cop kills a bunch of people other than the main characters throughout all of this. It should be noted.
like his thing, the Maniac Cop's thing is that he's killing innocent people. Like, killing innocent people and letting, like, obvious perps just walk free. Like, in the first movie, the first thing we see is, like, a woman being harassed by, like, two pickpockets. They chase after her, and she runs up to the Maniac Cop thinking he's a regular cop, and instead he just fucking strangles her right there in front of everybody.
I mean, he kind of kills the first guy, the first perp, in, like, a suicide by cop type situation, because he puts the gun back in his hand and sends him out in front of the police.
That's true, yeah.
He's but got kind of a nuanced plan for a zombie.
Yeah, he's kind of killing indiscriminately, I would argue.
But trying to make police look bad.
Except for one special guy we'll get to later.
Well, and that's part of the thrust that makes the first Maniac Cop so interesting, is that, like, it plays with the idea of, you know, what if
anti-cop.
The anti-cop. What if a cop did something so bad that the public distrusted the cops? And boy, oh boy, that right there should tell you that this movie was made in a different time. But, like, the second one kind of throws all of that out the window, and it's just kind of taken as read that, like, oh yeah, cops are pieces of shit. Because the hero in this movie is played by Robert Davi, who is, like, one bad day away from becoming another Maniac Cop.
He's very gray morality.
Like, the introduction to this character, what's his name, McKinney, like, all we see is a perp, like, I keep saying perp, some criminal, some guy leaping out of a third-story window, landing on the hood of a car, getting up, and then within, like, a split second, Robert Davi just shoots him square in the face.
Well, actually, he shoots to wound.
Because he shoots to wound, but, like, he fucking kills this guy.
But he doesn't want to deal with the paperwork.
He's exactly. Also cosplaying as the Shadow throughout this entire movie, it should be noted.
He is. But he's also, like, he goes in to see the psychiatrist, Susan, like, right after she talks to Jack and Teresa. And he does the whole spiel about how, okay, yeah, I'm here to see the psychiatrist. I've done my time. I'm sitting in the chair. Can I go kill more people now? And so, like, right there, you're like, okay, this guy kind of sucks. But guess what, people? Strap in, because he's your hero for the entire movie.
Like it or not.
The big central set piece, the thing that I loved about this movie more than anything in the world. So we have the first car chase, where Maniac Cop Cordell is chasing Susan and Teresa in her stolen taxi cab. And she's driving this cab on the rims of the car because he's slashed the tires. So there's sparks just flying everywhere.
Has she been handcuffed to the car at this point? I forget.
Not yet. Not, that's coming.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
But this is where we get our Christmas for the episode.
Yeah, because once that car stops and, like, Teresa gets thrown from the car, like, he picks her up and throws her through a plate glass window into, like, a general store with all kinds of Christmas stuff in it.
Yep.
She immediately grabs a chainsaw and runs at him like she thinks she's Bruce Campbell.
It's very good. It's a good moment.
It's a good bit. And then he literally grabs the chainsaw and just snaps her neck. Like, boom. Teresa, our secondary lead from the first movie, is gone. And now we're stuck with Susan.
Like it or not.
So like it or not, and Cordell takes Susan and handcuffs her to the wheel of the car while she's standing outside the car. And then sends the car on a wild goose chase all on its own. And she's, like clinging to the side of this car, going through, swerving through oncoming traffic and shit, trying to, like, steer it. It's a genuinely great, like, stunt sequence, and I'm kind of amazed it's in this movie.
It's better than, like, this movie deserves, honestly.
It really, really, really is. Like, I cannot stress enough how good the stunts and the action is in Maniac Cop 2. It's kind of the only thing worth watching. I mean, I know we're ostensibly a Christmas podcast, but really this is just a podcast for us to find excuses to watch weird shit like this. And boy, howdy, do we ever.
It's a good time.
It is. Susan, though, she does actually finally make it to the TV studio, where it's kind of like a New York City version of America's Most Wanted, where she, like, explains the Cordell killings and stuff.
And guess who's watching this broadcast?
Oh, of course. Of course he is.
Our next special guy, one Stefan Terkel.
wacky, zany character.
Wacky, zany character. But I just like the fact that it's so close to Stephen Urkel.
Hang on. Because now, so we've established that he's Turkell in this movie. So there must be another world, another scenario where he's also Urkel, and he's just like the super nebbish nerdy guy. But when he becomes the cool guy, he's just a serial rapist. Well, that's how it worked in the 90s, people.
I think he also killed them.
Yeah, he did. He's oh yeah, so guess what? There's a whole other like serial killer in this movie.
He wears many hats. Let's put it that way.
You might say he can leave his hat on. That's a stupid joke.
Oh my god.
He's not even a stripper. It doesn't make sense.
Anyhow, one Stefan Turkell, who's another main character in this movie. He's a serial killer who targets and kills strippers, as serial killers are wont to do.
Of course.
And he finds, basically, he breaks into another main character's, is it Christy? I'm so bad with names.
So let's just say it is, because I honestly do not recall. And I feel bad about that, but I don't recall.
You know what? I can look it up. We're going to get this, we're going to get her name right.
I think Cheryl.
Cheryl.
That sounds right, yeah.
So he sees a stripper named Cheryl, and he breaks into her apartment after hours, after she's gone home, in order to do the things that serial rapists slash killers do. And he is the normal police make it into the apartment because she's already called them when he's trying to break in. But
oh no, Norm MacDonald called the real cops.
Yes. But guess who shows up? The anti-cop, the maniac cop, also shows up and basically starts strangling Cheryl as well and kills the two other cops.
Hello, maniac cop. I'm being attacked by the real cops.
Kind of a hat on a hat situation for
yes.
serial killers.
I want to see the TV ad for the maniac cop like advertising his services.
Real cops got you down.
Are you a serial killer arsonist? Do you need the help of the maniac cop?
I'll only overshadow you a little bit.
Do you dial 119?
You dial the number is area code 666.
Thank you.
999-9999. I don't know.
Oh, fun fact. My grandparents, where they used to live, they're not their area code, but their prefix was 666. I always thought that was
really?
Kind of fun. Yep.
That's allowed?
Wow.
Yeah, it was a thing. And it was like, ba-ba-ba, 666, ba-ba-ba-ba.
Whoa.
It was a thing. Yeah.
There has to be a church in that area code, right?
Oh, plenty, I'm sure.
I'm sure they're thrilled about that.
I'm just surprised they didn't throw a fuss about it, but anyhow.
Maybe they sell t-shirts.
I don't think there's not a 666 area code.
No, not there's. It's not an area code, but it's the prefix. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
It would be very cool if it was an area code. It would be very cool if the governing body that did it made it just like a small part of Death Valley, and it's a gimmick. But it would be such a cool gimmick.
Oh yeah, or like the town in the Caymans that's just called Hell.
Oh yeah. That'd be really fun too. Man, I should take a civil service test and get on this.
Oh, boy. So, anyway, yeah, the middle portion of this film, if you were, for some reason, bored by, like, zombie serial killer cops murdering people, the middle chunk of this movie takes place almost entirely in a strip club.
So there's
Club 69.
Plenty to do, plenty to see.
Is it really called Club 69?
Yes.
One of them was.
Yes.
Oh, how did I miss that?
I think it was the second one. I think it's the first one they go to in like their little sting.
Was that where we had our one pinball machine sighting?
No, the pinball machine's at the convenience store at the very beginning of the film. There's a POW machine. There's a pin bot. And there's one other machine, which I can't quite place. Let me go back and look at the screenshot I sent you all.
But you get I just recalled now, we need to talk about that first scene, that first robbery scene, because it's kind of amazing.
Very good lighting.
It's fun. All the product placement. You got your name brand bodega.
Yeah. Something else I wanted to bring up is that for one of the fun things about watching movies from like the early 80s and early 90s is looking at all the brand names and labels and seeing how few or how many of them still look exactly the same.
Yeah, it's
quite a few of them do.
Operation Wolf, I think is the other one.
Okay.
Yeah. Operation. So it's a POW and Operation Wolf are the two arcade games, and then there's a Pinbot.
I'm a fan of Pinbot.
Pinbot's a good.
I enjoy a good Pinbot.
Yeah. Anyhow.
So yeah, we're jumping way back to the beginning of this movie because I need to just tell you how wild this scene is. It's basically like the first convenience store robbery scene out of RoboCop, and they just kind of transposed it to the beginning of this movie where, you know, a guy is sticking up a convenience store and the clerk is, you know, hitting the silent alarm. And while he's trying to stall for time, he convinces the guy to let him, you know, scratch off a bunch of lotto tickets. You know, hey, maybe we'll be a winner. Maybe I'll just get him out the door with a winner. And hey, guess what? The clerk scratches off a $5,000 winning ticket. And I guess the maniac cop decided this was against the law because he shows up and kills the clerk in cold blood, and the killer gets away for a brief moment. See, it still follows. I love it. It still follows like the horror movie rules of like you slip up one time and that's it for you.
But
it's a wonderful scene and also terrible.
Yeah.
Brad, am I distressing you? I'm sorry.
You're distressing me because the rest of the logic doesn't follow. Or if it does, it follows really perverted 80s, early 90s logic.
No, I know, because like most of his whole thing is that, you know, innocent people, innocent or guilty, doesn't matter. Just kill them all.
Yeah. Kind of his MO. Yeah. That's his MO. That's better than you're a stripper, so you deserve to die, or you're tattling on the police or me, so you deserve to die. I don't know, man.
And he wants to heighten the violence, like turn a robbery into a murder or something unspeakable into something worse.
Yeah.
Exactly. And again, it's all in service of like just making the cops look bad because like they didn't need to kill that guy, but he had a gun on him. Ugh. What a waste.
And he, but just to mention a side note, does he carry around a sword cane nightstick?
He does.
He totally does, which is a new gadget for him in this movie, I think.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah. Second kill with Jack, he stabs him through the throat.
Yeah.
Which, and the newspaper.
And the newspaper. Yeah.
Bruce gets it pretty freaking bad in this movie, I gotta say. So jumping back to where we were, so Turk Hell tries, it's like this, I have to say this because I just watched it last night, it's like the scene in Bride of Frankenstein where the blind man meets Frankenstein and tries to make him his friend. It's kind of like that, because Turk Hell takes Cordell down to his little humble abode,
his little
perv cave in the sewers, and he's like, "Yeah, we could live down here. You and I could do odd jobs around town, and we can live down here in peace and quiet." And the maniac cop just kind of deals with it.
He just kind of hangs for a bit.
Like, yeah, you know what, guy? You know what, you little weirdo? You're okay.
He's our very special guy. He has all the ladies he's killed up on a wall, and he's like, they won't be dancing no more.
Best roommates for life.
BFFs.
Can we talk about, I guess, the final act gambit of this movie? Like, what the maniac cop is trying to do, or what Turkel says the maniac cop's trying to do?
So Turkel gets arrested to start this whole, set up this whole thing.
Cheryl's able to point him out.
Yes,
when he's scoping his next victim.
That's right. They go and they sting him at Club 69, or whatever the other one is.
Oh yeah, it's a great scene because like all the cops pay their cover charge to get into the strip club, and then one of the cops is just like, "Well, we paid to get in here. We might as well enjoy it."
I think it's the commissioner. He's like, "Well, we're here. We may as well drink."
Yeah.
And why, as to why the commissioner is on a sting, I guess he's invested in stopping Cordell or whatever, but.
More on that.
In a moment.
Yes.
Shit, what the hell, how did we get to Sing Sing? Because the entire end of the movie happens at Sing Sing, the prison.
So Cordell gets arrested. Maniac Cop busts into HQ and kills a bajillion cops. And then busts Cordell out. They all change into cop uniforms. One of the other dudes in the holding cell is scheduled to go back to Sing Sing tomorrow. But Cordell wants to go back to Sing Sing to get revenge against the three guys who killed, air quotes, killed him. And then release all the inmates.
Also, one of the inmates going along with this plan is Danny Trejo.
Doesn't he get killed?
I think he does, yeah.
Because he's like not part of, he doesn't want to be part of the plan? Or does he get intimidated into keep going along with the plan? I forget.
I don't know, but he's there. He does not join them for this mission.
So he definitely gets killed. There's a scene where he's like, I don't want to do this, man. And then I think Maniac Cop just kills him.
Yeah.
And so the idea is, and Cordell is, Turkel is explaining all this, that basically they're going to release all the inmates and make like a criminal army, basically.
A maniac cop army.
A maniac cop army.
He's the Saruman of maniac cops.
Yes.
Maniac cops born from the earth.
So they take a bus, a police bus, back to Sing Sing. And they're like, well, you're not supposed to be here yet. And they're like, oh, we showed up early. And our protagonists, such as they are, our ragtag band protagonists follow them to Sing Sing. Somebody take it away.
Robert Davi McKinney, who at this point kind of fades into the background because he really doesn't figure into the end at all. I know he's in part three, so I assume he just left the movie. He's like, well, I'm going to pick this back up later.
I'm going to go have a smoke. I'll see you in part three.
So the cops have surrounded the prison. And Cordell and Turkel and all the other guys are in there. And the commissioner, who is it? It's Michael Lerner, who we last saw as the asshole book publisher from Elf.
Oh, yeah.
Lerner and Danny Trejo are both in the Double Trouble Club. If we can just find one more, they'll be in the Triple Threat Club. But Commissioner Lerner, he has a name. I'm just going to call him Michael Lerner. He gets on the megaphone and he basically apologizes to Cordell for the way he was treated and the things that he did to put him in prison and get him murdered. Apologizes for all this. And Cordell seems to have a change of heart, where instead of unleashing all the prisoners, he gets set on fire, but then he just burns all the other prisoners alive.
Specifically, he burns the three that killed him.
Yeah, the three that he's there to kill, he kills. But then Cordell is presumably killed and is presumably immolated.
Oh, that's right. He does kill Cordell, because Cordell's like, I thought you were my best friend for life. You can't do this to me. I made us matching charm bracelets.
We were zombie blood brothers together. Everybody dies.
Well,
that fire stunt goes on and on.
Yeah, that fire is like he's on fire. He grabs one guy and that guy's on fire and he runs around and he drops down. And then Cordell grabs another guy and he gets on fire and he runs around and drops down. It's a very prolonged sequence, and like, If I could say anything in favor of this movie, like, the stunt work is pretty top notch. Like, they at least knew what the heck they were doing.
The guy in the flame suit is doing like a slow walk, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
Because usually when you see somebody in a flame suit for a movie, they're like flailing around, because that's what they've been told to do. They're not worried about it. I mean, I'm sure they're worried about it because you only have so long in those suits. But he's just doing a slow walk.
I'm sure they've slowed that footage down to make him look like he's really taking his time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's movie magic, but you know what? It's a magic trick that works. That's the end of the Maniac Cop, or is it?
So they bury him with full honors, and somebody throws a badge onto the coffin, And guess what happens? You'll never guess what happens.
The maniac cop, Cordell, he lives again. His hand bursts through the coffin, and he takes that badge back to hell.
So why does Maniac Cop 3 exist? I mean, money, of course, but other than money, what's the plot reasoning for why Cordell's still maniacing it up?
I want to read you the one sentence summary for this movie, Brad, because you're going to hear this and you're going to want to immediately go watch this movie. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
A priest practicing the voodoo arts resurrects Matt Cordell, who takes his badge and comes back from the dead to do his bidding.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Maniac Cop 3, Voodoo Priestess. It's basically Weekend at Bernie's, part 2.
So it actually says he grabs his badge, and they'll probably just replay the footage again.
I mean, yep. As far as, like, a lame-ass excuse to bring back a villain, that's... At least they know how flimsy it is. So it's basically the horror equivalent of a wizard did it.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And also, we have to mention at this point, like, all three of these Maniac Cop films are all written and directed by the same two people. Like, William Lustig and Larry Cohen are the team behind these. So, like, they're 100% laser-focused on telling this story. There's no half-assing about it.
It's their gift to the world.
And speaking of gifts to the world, I do know that Maniac Cops 2 and 3 just came out on 4K Blu-ray, and I kind of want to see what that looks like now.
Oh, my goodness. I also saw something about a remake at some point. They're going to remake it.
I'm sure that was in the cards, but right now, I really don't think you could do that right
Maybe
now.
Maybe not the right climate for it unless you take a different spin on it, I would guess.
I mean, if Jonathan Five were here... He would say that, you know, the movie would be called Regular Cop.
I know. I was waiting for that one. Or an ACAM, if you will.
All cops are maniac cops? Yes. Well, yeah. Allegedly.
Yeah, that's kind of the final moral of the movie that they tell you straightforwardly, is that there's not much difference between a cop and a maniac cop. Yeah.
Same and genus, so different species.
Yeah, and all I can tell you is that Robert Davi does return in Maniac Cop 3, and Robert Zadar is the Maniac Cop himself, Matt Cordell, doing a hell of a job in really ridiculous like zombie makeup.
Yeah,
like in the first movie, it's just his face with some like scarring on it, but in the sequel, it's a goofy ass zombie mask. Stuart, I'm sorry.
For me, the horror worked way better in the first one, and it was just like one of the best Robert Zadar performances I've ever seen. And then he's not really allowed to have the same effect in this one because it's a lot more of an action, like Die Hard influenced one, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. Like, they do definitely amp up the action, and the first one definitely works better as like a horror suspense kind of movie. I'll agree there. But man, the action in this is just so good. Maybe it was late. Maybe I had been a little sleep deprived enough, but I'd had a really fucking good time with Maniac Cop 2. but that's Maniac Cop 2, friends. We need to jump straight to the crankometer. Get some points added onto this bad boy, and let's continue on with Home for the Horror.
Wait, I'm receiving something. Is this a report from Johnny Five?
Oh, wow. Hot off the presses, folks. Jonathan Five has snuck in under the wire with his own take on Maniac Cop 2. Let's see what he had to say. Here's my field report. LOL, which cop is the maniac? I got it in one, folks.
Is that the whole report?
Oh, no, he goes on.
Oh, okay.
It's good to see they got someone with a fucked up, terrible face to go up against the zombie guy. Also, Robert Davi is banned from the repeat offender list for chud behavior, which is unfortunately true.
Oh, yeah. Man. Speaking of, did you see Bo Deedle was in the credits somewhere?
No, I missed that.
I don't remember seeing him in the movie, but that popped out in the credits.
Oh, jeez. And then he also wants us to know Marco Rodriguez, who played the convenience store robber at the beginning, also played the supermarket killer at the beginning of Cobra.
Huh.
So
Made
a good career out of that, apparently.
Speaking of the robber at the beginning of the film and Terkel, is it just a thing that this movie decided that all criminals have really bad, gross-looking teeth?
It seemed like they were going for a Richard Ramirez thing, at least with that guy.
Yeah, it was really gross.
It's gross and creepy. Like, I guess it's like movie shorthand for, oh yeah, this guy's definitely a creeper. But
I'm sure good people have bad teeth. This is not fair to people with bad teeth.
I know. I mean, there are white collar prisons for a reason.
Yeah, there are plenty of bad people with good teeth too. Let's put it that way. Teeth are not a good indicator of criminality or goodness. You heard it here first.
That's agreed. That's perfectly fair.
They are really gross looking though.
We'll defer that one to our British friends. So let's move on.
Oh, you went that, there, huh?
That was mean. I shouldn't have said that. I'll probably cut that joke.
It's up to you. It's your podcast. You want to do the hot takes? You do the hot takes.
And that's what we got J5 here for. And I'm channeling his robotness tonight by reading you his comments. But yeah, let's go straight to the crankometer. He's got a couple more comments, but they're pretty much crankometer related.
Okay.
So, folks, the crankometer, if you're not familiar, is our patented XY axis for rating Christmas movies. The X axis is how Christmassy a film is, the Christmosity scale, if you will. And the Y axis is the quality quotient, how good we found the film. So, gentle friends, let's begin. At the X axis, how Christmassy is Maniac Cop 2?
Yeah. It's doing that action movie thing. Where it most or the Shane Black thing, where it's mostly using Christmas as set dressing to put some decorations and pretty lights up. It doesn't really address it much.
Yeah.
Does anybody even bring up the fact that it's Christmas? I don't think so, right?
It's somewhat cold, yeah. And we're at sub Shane Black levels here.
Yeah, which is almost the point in its favor, I would say. Sorry.
Yeah, the only scene I can think of off the top of my head is the one where the commissioner is dressing down Bruce Campbell, and he's like basically yelling at him while decorating his Christmas tree in his office.
Yeah.
Other than that, that's really all we get.
Yeah. I have a bonus point for Terkel kind of looking like the Muppet Ghost of Christmas Present.
He certainly does, doesn't he?
Now, if only he would just sing that song to Matt Cordell, then we'd have something here. Oh man,
so is that a one?
Muppet Maniac Cop. Let's
there
do
we
it.
Go.
I would pay good money to see that. I would pay good money to see like a legitimate Muppet horror film, and that dumb cop procedural one that they did doesn't count because that's not the real Muppets. I didn't even see that. You know the one I'm talking about, right?
Jim Henson's son was involved.
Say
the
what?
Happy Time Murders?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that. No, I mean, just Muppets, they're at least doing a new legit horror thing with the Muppet Haunted Mansion. That's a thing. That's something, but it's not like...
It's
no Meet the Feebles, we'll say that.
Yeah. Anyhow.
But
one?
Yeah, man. Disney?
Yeah.
Hey, Disney friends? Hey. Get at us. We have a brilliant idea for your Disney Plus service. It's called Muppet Maniac Cop. Wait, no. I've got one better. Muppet Maniac Cop 2. Just don't even acknowledge the first. Just go straight to 2. Okay. Crankometer, Christmosity. What are we thinking? 1, maybe?
I think a 1's fair.
Yep, I'd go 1.
It's like... The negatives are kind of, we reserve those for when movies misuse Christmas, and this really doesn't do that. So
kind of sidesteps.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm fine with a 1. J5 in his notes says that, you know, the Christmas theme is mainly an excuse to throw some decorations on the set, which pretty much, and he applies Bradford's rule of this is one of those 1 in 12 movies are set at Christmas movies.
Yep.
And... That's pretty true this time around.
Should we come up with a shorthand for that? because I feel like it's kind of weird to explain it every single time. The law of...
Well, 1 in 12 is not a really... That's the number that you get is not a sexy number, so we can't really say it's the 8.3 repeating rule.
Repeating, of naturally.
Yeah, of course. Ah, yeah.
I'll figure out a name for it. You keep going.
Honestly, you know, the 8% rule is pretty good, but we'll keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with a 1. Let's do that. Give it a positive 1 for Chrismosity. So then the quality quotient, the y-axis. How good is Maniac Cop 2? Did you guys actually enjoy this one?
I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I'd say around a 2 for this one, but Maniac Cop was higher. Maniac Cop 2, I think, is also a 2 for me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, the first one is definitely the stronger film, but I just plain had too much fun with this one to say that it's necessarily bad. Bradford, what about you?
Yeah, I would say like a 1 or a 2. I thought it was all right. I enjoyed my time that I had with it, but I wouldn't like go out of my way to recommend it or watch it again. So it's fine.
Yeah, it's perfectly serviceable. It's decent. Some decent horror stuff in it, some decent gore effects, and man, those car chases are just aces.
Yep. So I haven't seen that many sparks in a while.
God. Did you? Oh man, this is going to be super nerdy and only Stuart's going to care. This had more sparks than that Sparks documentary.
Okay. Going, yeah, from 2 to a lot more than 2.
So I came up with a name for this 1 in 12 thing.
Okay, hit me.
I'm going to call it the dodeca month rule. Because dodeca denotes 12. So it's the dodeca month rule.
I like it.
We'll go with that for now. And if any listeners have something better, let us know. We're open to suggestions here.
A catchy name for the rule where 1 in 12 movies just naturally take place at Christmas.
Should fall around Christmas, yeah.
The dodeca month. I like that.
Yeah, dodeca month law.
So Maniac Cop 2, folks, let's mark it on our scatter plots. That's a positive 1, positive 2. We're all pretty much in agreement here. And like J5 says, it would be a 3 if Robert Davi was almost anybody else. John gives it 1 point for sleaze and 1 point for the absolutely comical amount of wrecked cop cars. not since the Blues Brothers. I'll agree with that. So yeah, Maniac Cop 2, if you want to watch it, I think it's on it's streaming on Tubi, I think.
And Shudder?
Shudder, yeah.
I think it's also on Vudu.
Okay. So, but it's out there, it's available. And if you're one of the weird physical media people like me, go check out that 4K Blu-ray and let me know how it is, because I kind of want this now. But yeah, that's going to have to do it for this episode of Christmas Creeps. Come back in a couple of weeks. We will be continuing with Home for the Horror Days as we dig into The Conjuring Part 2.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're going to get some real spooks and scares in this show this time. But until then, friends, you can find us on the internet all over the place. We're on Twitter at Christmas Creeps. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/Christmas Creeps. Like and subscribe anywhere you listen to your podcasts, if it's on Stitcher or YouTube or Apple Podcasts, anywhere. Just, you know, leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. And you know what? Share this show with a friend, because the holidays are coming around and, you know, we would love to spread the love of awful, weird Christmas movies with everybody else. So let's see how big we can grow this family of ours as the holiday season approaches. Gentle friends, Bradford, Stuart, anything you guys want, any final thoughts you want to leave us with before we go?
No, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. We'll have to have you on again sometime soon.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Bradford, how about you?
No thoughts, head empty.
And I'm all out of beer, so that means we gotta go. So folks, that's been Christmas Creeps. I've been Joseph Wade.
I'm Bradford.
I've been Stuart.
Happy holiday hunting, everybody.
Good night.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.